Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Moncrief on News Talk.
And our email address is afternoon@newstalk.com. That's the email address you can also use if you'd like to send in any questions for Mary McAvoy and Declan Buckley for So You Think You're an Adult. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon, to you.
Yes, here is your first question. Here's your starter for 10. I've been going out with a really nice guy for about 4 months now. We get on great, and I think the relationship has legs. However, there's one thing that really nags me. He's quite badly short-sighted and wears strong prescription glasses. However, he refuses to wear them in bed, as he feels they're not attractive, and they keep falling off and things get too athletic. The problem is this. When he isn't wearing his glasses, he often gets lost. He struggles to find things. A misplaced hand there, an errant leg there. Unfortunately, it means he often doesn't quite manage to engage in the situation as well as one might expect. It literally hit and miss. I have suggested contact lenses, but he's allergic to the solution they come in. Oh, that's a bad pun. I've also suggested that he allow me to guide him, but he rejected this idea as he feels it would make me his carer. How do we find a practical solution so that the problem doesn't escalate?
Oh, they're nodding at me.
Oh, OK. I was letting you go first.
OK, yeah. Well, I'll go first then. Yeah. I mean, to me, like, you know, I don't think it's anything to do with the glasses that he can't find things, you know, because really.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's like you can memorize human anatomy. Really, it's not that. You can make a fair guess.
Yeah,
really.
Well, you can go, OK, well, that's that. And then down a bit further is that. And the one thing that threw me was the errant leg.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about, but like, I mean, let's assume that we're not, our chain has not been yanked here. And I think, what do you say to him? What do you say to him if he doesn't want to wear the glasses? You know,
well, I don't blame him because the glasses would be impractical. Yeah, they'd fall off your head.
Yeah.
Plus, I think she can guide him
without him knowing he's been guided.
Yeah. I mean, you look,
don't you think?
I do, but I you know, the glasses thing, it's like, do I wear my glasses? No, I don't. I don't wear my glasses in bed, but I'm not as short-sighted as your man by the sounds of it. It's kind of like one of those ones, you know, the Mr. Magoo thing, the cartoon when I was a kid, and your man would take his glasses off and he wouldn't be able to find anything. And then he, you know, literally becomes incompetent or whatever. And that's cause for a complaint as far as she's concerned. I do see her point that she's going, I hear. And he's like, no, I don't feel very attractive. And it's all a bit about himself. I think she needs to get him, you know, those ones, the glasses that they give the long distance runners, you know, the ones that they're strapped to your head, or little kids, you know, the little kids wear.
Oh my God, he's got the glasses on.
He's going in. Like, you know, like they're beach goggles.
Is it 800 metres or 3,000?
Yeah, and he's ready for any eventuality.
Stop. Yeah.
I think, though, there's this stupid kind of like glasses aren't sexy kind of thing that people think, you know, that has to be removed.
I love your glasses.
I wasn't speaking about myself, I do agree. Oh my God, I do agree.
You can put your fishing rod away now, Dad.
But there is also the thing of a lot of people just prefer when, you know, antics in the bedroom are convenient and easy and having to go to all this kind of effort. People don't want to bother with all that kind of stuff. So going to find your sexy glasses, you know, and strapping them onto your head because you're ready for, kind of takes the edge off. So,
yeah,
you know, I think if there's open communication between two partners and saying that there's an errant leg or whatever, would the solution not be to put your glasses on? And if she's saying it repeatedly, maybe he'll just go, yeah, okay, I will.
But like, to me, okay, I'm the errant leg is really getting to me. Sorry, I've just got this thing. Do you need glasses to know where to put your leg? I mean,
yeah.
Do you? Are you agreeing with me or are you not? Are you,
no,
is
I am.
Yes
I am totally agreeing. And I'm wondering, is the problem hers somehow? There's some other problem in here that she's not saying what it is that isn't to do with.
Is there somebody else in the bed with
you?
He
can't see what he's doing. because a lot of that, you know, if you're kissing somebody passionately, you often close your eyes.
Yeah,
you, for instance,
blind people can have sex, you know?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You have the lights off. As I was telling you before we came on air, I went with a girl for 3 months. She was blind as a bat. Didn't know what I looked like until the contact lenses arrived in the post.
And then?
Then it was downhill from there, obviously.
No, but that's what I can't get. It's because, like, I mean, okay, there's some exhibitionists and they do it in Croke Park with all the floodlights on. But, like, most people...
Hey, Mary,
like,
when was this?
What?
When did you do that?
A very long time ago. I don't have the energy.
It was half-time entertainment.
It was like, obviously, well, before TikTok.
Before Riverdance, obviously.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why it's such a big problem for him finding bits, because he's not like he's not obviously the first time he's ever had sex, and he's not completely blind, because that is the only reason that you would have to be so
inept.
Klutzy.
Yeah,
you know.
I think you actually hit on something. Excuse the pun. You hit on something that I wasn't able to see. But it is that maybe the glasses are actually a kind of a red herring in this whole thing, and they're actually not related to the real problem.
Yeah,
is that there's just maybe a little bit of kind of just crap sex happening there.
And
it's nothing to do with this.
And she's
visual,
blaming the glasses.
So maybe I'd certainly have a go at the old guiding him without letting him know he's been guided, if that's going to make her feel a bit better.
But sometimes, like, you know, being a little bit more, you know, blunt.
Yeah, but
you see, glasses are not. Sometimes when it's a newish couple, you need a bit of guidance, does no harm.
But he said he didn't want to be guided, that he was she would be his carer. No, that's
right.
Like,
I don't think any carers do that.
No. But like.
They shouldn't be doing. Let's just
maybe fluorescent paint. If she painted her body with like arrows and things,
and go,
or little flashing lights,
or like, you know, on House of the Year where they put the red dot in your favorite part.
A little kind of a runway job on the bed.
More sound cues, I think, probably. Like, you know, beep beep.
Like you're parking a car.
Yeah. Beep 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 beep.
Okay, this poor woman is now, if she's listening to us now, but she's mortified.
It is the bit of, like, you know, what is the real problem is what this person has to resolve first.
Yeah.
And then open communication. You know, we're always saying this on this lot. You know, just say what you're thinking, you know.
But I think she has, though. I get the feeling that, well, she not get the feeling, it's in the letter that she has said what she thinks.
But if she's applying, if she's saying that what her concern is that, are you sure you're having a good time there, Timmy, without your good glasses on? Then he's only thinking about his good glasses on. I know I'm grand. Whereas if she's saying, you need to put your glasses on because I'm not grand, it's a totally different conversation.
And well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Thank God.
Yeah, no, that does. You know, I'm not a very direct person, so.
No, I know. And I think that's what I meant earlier on, is that a lot of the time people prefer to kind of just the convenience of not saying anything and making life easy and avoiding stuff. Mm. And that's the road towards lack of fulfillment.
Yeah.
And, you know, and creating issues. And then sometimes the issue becomes another issue. And then, oh, because you didn't say the one thing at the beginning.
Thing, yeah.
And then, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's a good, maybe not kind of too blunt, but just say, look, I'm not enjoying this. And I think you could do better with your glasses on. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, but I wonder though, is it the glasses at all?
Yeah.
Sure, probably, if he can find it, you know, with his glasses or, you know, without, yeah, you know,
yeah,
what I mean.
Yeah, because it is. It's not, it sounds like he's kind of scaling the Eiger or something. Like it's something that he's never been there before. Do you know what I mean? It's not, you know, it's a body, and it's a body he's been to bed with quite a few times. So God, he got to know.
And if he leaves it really long, then it becomes worse. Because it's kind of what was going on for the last 24 years then, Margot.
You know.
So you know, you need to be honest about your own needs.
So it's Margot and Timmy, is it?
Well, Margot and Timmy,
Right, okay.
Margot and Timmy.
Okay, right there.
Yeah. Good luck, Margot and Timmy, with your future.
Yeah. No, but just
any resemblance, et cetera.
Yeah, we
especially
are not
a fella called Timmy who wears big glasses. And
strapped onto the back of his head.
My husband has been out of a job since Christmas, and it's an incredibly stressful situation for us. He got redundancy, so we figured out we would be okay, but now the bills are coming in quicker than the money is going out. I know he's doing everything he can to look for a new job, has gotten to second round in two different roles, but then didn't get the job. He's really down about it, so I'm trying to be the positive one and keep him in good form. But to be honest, I'm really worried now. I'm really frustrated for him, but at what point do I broach that maybe he needs to broaden his thinking and sort of just take the next job that comes along? We've a young child and a mortgage. My salary isn't enough for us to live on, so we are eating into our savings. I would appreciate any advice.
Well, I think that he, rather than saying take another, you know, another job or get the first job that comes along, why doesn't she suggest him getting a part-time job while he is looking for a job that he really, really likes? And I'm quite sure that he's aware of the financial strain that she's feeling.
Sure,
it's probably one of these things of people worried sick and they're afraid to say it to each other. Mm. And probably in lots of ways, even though it's not his fault he was made redundant, he's probably feeling terribly responsible he's made redundant.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an unhappy situation. But if you can sit down and kind of say, I'm with you in this, I really am, it's us against the world, you know, let's try and get you a part-time job, and then you can really shoot for the stars then and see, you know, truly try to get it, just to take a little bit of the financial pressure off, and then you have a bit of luxury time to look for a job that you really like. It might be less of an ultimatum than take any job that's coming. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm sure he feels bad enough already.
Because he probably doesn't feel great about himself.
He probably
feels like he's a failure and all that kind of stuff.
I don't really know much about this guy and about what the kind of work he's looking for is, because that can be pertinent as well. Because sometimes in certain levels of jobs or certain kinds of work, it takes a while to find the job, but when you do, it's really well paid, so therefore the wait and the search is worth it. Whereas, you know, at different levels of income, the gap between taking the first job that comes your way or not is kind of irrelevant, because, you know, it's all about the economics of the situation, and it's a long term game. I think often as well is that, you know, if this guy got the redundancy package from the last job, he is now looking for a job kind of by accident rather than somebody who was consciously thinking about his career. And some people are very good about planning where they're going to go in their lives from one job to the next, and they're kind of constantly thinking about their next, you know, their next move, whatever the next art of the deal scenario is going to be for them. And I think for those people, the kind of the game is kind of easy, whereas for other people finding a job is really stressful.
Yes.
And if you don't have a job and you're looking for a job and your financial situation isn't great, that's the worst of all possible scenarios. So I think what's really important is separating out the you know, the job of your dreams from what is a necessity. And I think that's what you're implying about, you know, finding some way to get money to come in. I think economic situation out there looks like it's turning, and it's a worrying time for a lot of people. So maybe what seems like a sensible career plan 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago, may no longer be the wise thing to do. Yeah. Like a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of scenario.
Yeah.
That maybe grabbing onto the first source of income that you can right now is better than being out of a job if we hit into a recession and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that they need to sit down and they need to have a proper planning conversation about this, because they're both in it together, as you said. His desires, his wants for a job kind of come second to what their objective is as a family,
moment,
kind of protecting both of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, loving your job is wonderful, but it is kind of a luxury sometimes because, you know, you need to eat, you know, have food on the table first. So from that point of view, I'd say that they need to have an honest conversation. They need to both know exactly what the plan is. Her not knowing is adding to her frustration around the whole situation. I think that that's the first step. The first step is kind of knowing what he thinks the likelihood are, the likelihood is of him getting a new job soon.
Well, just something struck me there. They were talking about childcare, weren't they?
I don't think childcare was mentioned.
Sorry, it wasn't childcare.
Yeah.
So no,
they have a young child and a mortgage. I think is what you mentioned. Yeah. Her salary alone isn't enough to kind of cover what the household outgoings are. Yeah. Which
if they did because they were both working, and need childcare. Then if he just took a little deep breath and decided to look after the childcare, that at least would cut one of the expenses for a while. I'm not sure because I don't know about placing children in childcare, whether you lose your place or whatever.
You would, of course, yeah. People pay for the place even if the child isn't going in case they have to use it.
Because I don't understand those things or I don't know about them. But I really think, and this is going to sound so kind of dippy hippy and wishy washy, first of all, just form a united front in love in front of this, and you will. That sounds very evangelical. I don't mean it to sound that way, but like, you know, realize you married this guy because you loved him and you're in it together. And if you can communicate that to him, that gives him hope, and he'll feel your support. And I honestly, you will get through it. Don't worry. Don't doubt that. I'm not going to say don't worry because I'd worry myself. But you will get through it. But I think maybe a part-time job would be at least a start for him. He would feel that he has a bit of, not dignity, of course he's dignity anyway, but you know the way sometimes people feel that they're useless because they don't have a job and they can't contribute.
Again, it does all relate to what kind of work he's talking about and what his options are, because, you know, if you're running around as like the chief financial officer of a large multinational company and you're looking for another role like that, you're talking about, you know, you're not, it's kind of impractical to then suggest that you get a part-time job down in Tesco, you know, to get the money going in, because that's a big kind of change in lifestyle.
But I would say look for the job at the same time.
I'm being dramatic in my example of the difference there.
But look at the job at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
I think,
no, I mean, she's not wrong. I suppose it's how to phrase it to him, because he's so delicate and she's probably a bit frazzled herself. Possibly more the... Because he did get to the second round in two jobs, so he is doing well.
He's doing well. Yeah,
it's just it's probably
job,
a bit
job
crushed.
Hunting is like this really weird mix of luck rather than skill. It's about being the right person for the other right person at the right time. It's like jumping from one moving train into another train moving in the opposite direction. Everything has to work perfectly and just right, you know, for the whole thing to work. And sometimes it doesn't work out later or whatever. But I think, you know, when you're looking for a job, it's about persistence. Just keep at it. You can't quit. And undermining somebody's confidence while they're in that process isn't great. So she has to be very delicate about the way that she's going on. You know, and again, it all depends on the kind of work and what the industry that he's looking for a job in is like. Because if the industry is in trouble, then, you know, taking a turn and moving to something else, maybe now is the time to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I
she needs to know what he's doing. She needs to know what the plan is. She can't be like a silent background.
Well, his plan is to get a job.
Yeah. No, but she cannot
that's
know.
Not a bad plan.
Although I'd rather not have one myself.
But the best of luck, because it is, I feel a kind of a sadness coming off this, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a terrible place to be stuck in. Yeah. We need to phrase it differently. The position was made redundant, not the person. Okay, that's a very good point. I'm renting in Dublin. I was delighted to get a room in a good location, as I'd heard horror stories about trying to find somewhere to rent. I was really lucky to get where I got. And even though the rent is expensive, the house is nice and there's three of us sharing together, so it's not too bad. A few weeks after I moved in, I copped that I'd never been inside one of my housemates' bedrooms. I mentioned it to the other girl and she casually said, "That's because she's a hoarder." I sort of figured hoarder just meant really messy or something, but it actually is so much worse. The housemate makes food in the kitchen, but then eats in her room. And it's gotten to the point now where she uses all the crockery and never brings it downstairs. I think the room is full of dirty dishes and mouldy cups of tea and food wrappers. It's gotten to the point where I kept one set of cutlery along with a plate, bowl and saucepan in my room so that I have somewhere clean to use. I hate living like this, but know that it would be a nightmare to find anywhere else. How do I bring this up?
I don't know what age these people are, but this reminds me of, you know, when I was back in college and you go around to, you know, student accommodation and the, you know, the living standards and the hygiene and all that kind of stuff was pretty disgusting. And, you know, most people grow out of that. You know, most of the time it's because somebody tells them, would you ever grow up out of that? Because this way of living is so, it's so rotten and it's so selfish. And like, if there's somebody using shared stuff and then bringing it up to their room and not bringing it back down again, you've got the perfect right as a flatmate to say, would you just bring back the crockery? There's nothing left for us to use. Somebody being messy in their own room is their own prerogative. I know, I don't care about that. But like, I find it strange that things are let slide to that level of inconvenience, really, because, you know, basically what's happening is somebody's choices are really negatively affecting the standard or the lifestyle of the other people sharing the place with them. And that's worth speaking up about. Yeah. It's just about, you know, say, again, I don't know whether there's a bit of drama going on there, a bit of hyperbole happening here, whether or not it is as bad as it, you know, is it just somebody taking dishes up into the room, because that's what the letter writer is also doing. So no leg to stand on there. Yeah. But if it is literally, you know, somebody's room is becoming something like out of a David Fincher movie, or there's something kind of horrible happening there, like flies and dead corpses and stuff like that. You know, you need to say something, you know.
Well, look, I think unless the room smells really bad, like there are corpses in there or whatever, I think what happens in a room is her business. So really, if you just put, so that's the boundary of her room. So basically, really, the only problem is the dishes. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And if you just say to her, look, there's no dishes left and you have them all, can you just bring them down? That's all. There's no big problem with, you know, for her, no big problem with us. And the other thing, as I know myself from bouts of depression, she doesn't sound so much as a hoarder as somebody who's very depressed and wants to just be in a room all the time.
That's well spotted there, because actually the minute you said that, I went, wow, that's a sign, isn't it?
It is
somebody who's removing themselves from shared spaces and also not coping well with just basic tasks of you
exactly
know,
and I know stuff. That I know that one very well, and you can spot them, and I can spot it in my life because I was that soldier. So I do think that maybe be a bit gentle with her, but so I just say, look, come here, we've no crockery, do you mind bringing down the stuff in your room? You don't have to even make an issue of it, and then you might get whatever way that she reacts, or even say, listen, let's wash up and let's have a dinner. Let's all have dinner together and see what she says. Just see what she says. See if you can coax her out. And if she doesn't want to, then that's, you have to respect that for her. But like, maybe say, look, that's just the dishes. Sort the dishes out first without any confrontation, because you really don't know what's going on there. But it doesn't seem to me like a healthy coping skills with life, do you know? So
no, yeah.
So I would be gentle with her, but I would say, can we have our dishes back, please?
Yeah, I don't think it's hoarding either, because hoarding is a specific thing where your place is full of stuff that you can't throw away.
Yeah.
This is just, as you say, it's kind of just this person has retreated back to the room.
I
really doesn't
so.
Want to go out of it that much.
Yeah, it's
and there are ways of engaging with that kind of a problem without making it the other person's problem, because there is nothing wrong with the person who wrote in saying that myself and the others in the house, or the one other person in the house, you know, this is kind of what we want the house to be like, you know, having sort of aims and aspirations for the shared living space. And, you know, would you be on for that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So that means these are our rules around cutlery and crockery. And
I think maybe just about that, because I think, and maybe just, maybe do suggest we have a Saturday morning coffee, you know, and croissant type thing where you all sit down in the same space. Just put it to her. She can say, no, that's not for me. That's fine. And then just say, well, just bring down the cutlery. That's all we ask, you know, and leave her, because she's obviously not.
I've shared accommodation with people, you know, many times in my life when we, you know, younger, when I was renting places and stuff. And I there were people who would literally close the door and live in their room, you know, and that was their share, their space, and they didn't really want to engage with everybody else in shared spaces. I never had a problem with people being like that because things, because for loads of reasons, some of which are alluded to in this letter, for, you're there for economic reasons. If you could afford to live by yourself, having your own purpose, you would. Yeah. So you're trying to make the best of a situation that isn't necessarily your choice situation. So, and everybody has to have their space to do that in their own way, which I'm down with. But the consequence of that, you know, retreating into your own room is that, you know, the rest of the space becomes less loved or less kind of, you know, that kind of thing you said about sharing things is a lovely thing to do. And if people engage with that, it does make your shared living situation nicer.
Yeah. But if she's not ready for it, that's the only thing.
No,
but anyways, just get the dishes back first. And I think that'll solve your problem.
Yeah.
And then,
but this poor woman perhaps needs a bit of help from someone.
She probably does. Yeah.
And I suppose you can't address that because obviously the person that wrote into us doesn't know her well or hardly
at all.
I think she probably,
the communication would open up, I think, if she maybe broached a coffee morning or something. And if that person says no and we just say, well, look, we just noticed you're in your room. Is everything okay with you?
Mm.
That's all.
Yeah.
And she can say, no. And everything's fine. Then you can do nothing. But well, I said, if you know, and then you could just say, well, we're here if you need anything. That's all you have to say.
Yeah, but, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone texts in to say, when you're living with three, this is a new word on me, chadults. That's what they do, leave us with no delf or cutlery.
Oh, child adult.
Yes, growing up adults who haven't bothered their arse to move.
It's like chads, like, you know, like male child adults. They're like chads, aren't they?
Aren't they?
Well, hanging chads, hanging around chads is what they are.
Okay.
Right, Mary and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.